Craig's here.
Tony's here.
Shane's here. Ryan's here. Craig's here. Tony's here. Shane's here. Ryan's here. Tony's here. Craig's here. Hey, guys. 77. Thanks what for agreeing to meet with me and record a little bit early because, you know, I'm in the process of moving, so shit's kind of crazy. It's also Passover. So,
yeah, we don't work on Good Friday, so.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
Ryan, you got work tomorrow?
Yeah, but a lot of our accounts are closing early, so it won't be bad.
Might get out a little early.
Yeah.
You'd love to see it. It's episode 77. We got some fun stuff today. We're going to give a review for the movie Black Sunday.
I forgot about that.
We've got some buys and sells. And so let's start with our 77s. Do you guys, I heard both of you have multiples. You guys got any shorties you want to start with?
Yeah, I'll go first. Let's start with former Hall of Famer or, you know, current Hall of Famer. He wasn't kicked out of the Hall of Fame. one of the greatest nose tackles in the NFL, Curly Culp.
Curly Culp. Okay.
Yeah.
Was his teammate Mo?
Shump outside linebacker.
That was a boomer joke.
grew up in Yuma, Arizona. And if you know anything about geography, Yuma is like a little blip town in the middle of nowhere, Arizona. Like
it's the desert.
Yeah.
310 to Yuma, man.
Yeah. He's drafted by the Denver Broncos in the 68 NFL draft. And actually was considered too small for the defensive line at 6'1", 265 pounds. So they tried him at guard and actually went to the Kansas City Chiefs because the Broncos thought he was too small.
Okay.
Played for 7 seasons with the Chiefs. He was part of Super Bowl IV, where he was the starting defensive tackle.
Is that the one they beat Minnesota, I'm assuming?
Yeah. Yeah, it says Chiefs coach Hank Stram, in an attempt to nullify Minnesota Vikings' quick outside rushing attack, decided to line Culp directly nose-to-nose with the Vikings' center, Mick Tinglehoff. The smaller Tinglehoff could not block Culp one-on-one and had to be helped by other linemen.
Damn.
This freed teammates Buck Buchanan, Willie Lanier, and other Chiefs defenders to get into the Vikings' offensive backfield and shut down their running game. The effectiveness of the Chiefs' defensive game plan helped continue the growing popularity of the 3-4 scheme in the 1970s.
Okay, so a nose tackle, like a nose tackle.
Yeah. After, 7 seasons in Kansas City, he went, midway through the season, he went to the Houston Oilers, and he can actually convince their head coach to try the 3-4 defense.
That's a power play.
Right. Says Culp was so strong, he required 2 and 3 players to block him. Houston won 7 out of their remaining 9 games after Culp came and convinced the coach to run the 3-4.
Damn.
Like I said earlier, is regarded as one of the greatest nose tackles in the NFL. 13 seasons, 6 All-Star games, twice honored as the AP's Defensive Player of the Week. August 3rd, 2013, he was inducted into the Hall of Fame.
I mean, if you're a good enough defensive player to go to your coach and be like, hey, you should try something completely different and base your entire defense around me. And they're like, sounds good. And it
worked. Not only that, but it was the middle of their season. So,
right?
Yeah. So they had already started the season in the 4-3.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Curly Culp.
Curly Culp. All right, Shane, you got 2?
I got 2 quick ones. So,
okay.
So as usual, my thing is the find the thing of the year. And this week's was kind of a doozy because I was in a weird headspace and I went down a really strange rabbit hole. So the guy I originally found turned out to be a giant piece of shit. but luckily, he received his final karmic reward. And then it kind of sent me into a spiral of like how we worship these people even after death and they're known pieces of shit. Yeah. So I was like, oh, I'll do like ironic criticism about how England worshiped this horse that raced for 30 years. But I was like, nah, that's going to kill the vibe. So I went with the first Impractical Jokers of 1977. So I got two guys named Sparky Lyle and Luciano Ray Ciccone.
Okay.
Nice.
So born Albert Walker Lyle, Sparky was a left-handed relief pitcher in the MLB for 16 seasons. And I'm not going to lie, baseball is really confusing to me as someone who doesn't engage with the sport at all, because every single thing is a statistic, and then those statistics are built upon other things. So it was a very specific thing of what he's known for in this time frame. So Sparky he set the record for the most saves for left-hander in 1977 with 179 career saves. So a save in baseball is when a relief pitcher finishes the game for the winning team.
Yep.
So Sparky became...
It has to be three runs or less.
Okay, Wikipedia didn't tell me that, but I appreciate your knowledge of the sport of baseball for educating me and everybody else listening to this fantasy football podcast.
I'm going to quiz you about this at various points. A couple weeks, be like, how many runs?
You're just going to say baseball and be like...
I will say, and Ryan's the baseball fan here, but like what I like most about baseball and their, you know, anal level of stats is, you know, they'll be like, hey, you know what's really good is his VORP. And I'm like, what the fuck is a VORP? And I know what it is, but like, it's so fun. They got some funny words.
Got to make it interesting, right?
Yeah, somehow.
All right, so Sparky also became the first player in MLB history to be named the American League Cy Young Award winner, which is the best pitcher in the division, in 1976 while being on the World Series champion New York Yankees. So after 77, even though he was the best relief pitcher in the league and he helped the New York Yankees win the World Series, the team opted to upgrade the position. Sparky didn't really like that. He was kind of a petty bitch. And there was a really toxic environment in the New York Yankees at that time period, which a lot of people will kind of cop to. One of the reports is that Sparky got a flare-up in his varicose vein that really caused poor mobility and kind of a decline in his thing. And one of his teammates, Nettles, replied that he went from Cy Young to Sayonara. So he was bounced around for a couple teams before retiring and managing the Somerset Patriots to a nice little dynasty. They won a lot of pennants in the minors. So he finished his MLB career with 3 All-Stars, 2 World Series, the Cy Young Award, 2 American League saves leaders, and he still holds a record for left-handed saves in the American League with 232 at a later date, which he did. So now the reason that we're here is because of the pranks. And as we found from the last episode in 76, that pranks in the 70s could be considered like terrorism nowadays. Or very like a traumatizing. So some of the stuff Sparky would do was he would put goldfish in the dugout water cooler, order pizzas to be delivered to their team's bullpen. Yogi Berra actually used his toothpaste one time. So Sparky injected Linamite, also known as Icy Hot, into the tube. And he said that when he started using it, that smoke started to pour out from his gums. And
oh my god.
Linamite has also been known to cause death due to poisoning. So 70s Holy people were just shit. Built different. So he would hot foot people, which is basically they'd put a lit match underneath someone's shoe or behind their foot or something while they're doing an interview, trying to get an illicit response, basically to burn them and cause shock. But Sparky's main claim to fame while he was on the Yankees, and I'd say he's the pioneer of this category, is being the first professional cake farter.
Cake farter.
So Sparky became notorious for getting naked and sitting on all the birthday cakes in the locker room during his time with the Yankees.
Oh my god.
So but he eventually stopped because teammate Ron Swoboda took a shit on the cake and was delivered to Sparky.
Oh my god. Fuck.
So it just shows you how
decadent they were spending. They just had constant birthday cakes in the locker rooms.
Yeah. So he was saying that it was because like he became too notorious, but I think someone shitting on his birthday cake and giving it to him kind of was like, all right, I got the message.
Oh my god.
So that's the first Impractical Joker. The second one is Luciano de how did I say his name? Sorry, Italian's hard. Ciccone. His nickname is actually the Golden Angel in Italian, so I'm going to call him the Golden Angel from going forward, so I don't offend our Italian listeners.
The Golden Angel.
Sorry, the Blonde Angel. So, I mean, similar, right?
go down to the corner of the street and talk to the Golden Angel.
You can talk to the Golden Angel, eh?
So he was a soccer player in the 70s, known for being incredibly athletic and a notorious prankster. So he was on the Lazio squad, which made the 1974 World... Oh, no, sorry. While he was on the Lazio squad, which is like a team within Italy. Sure. It's probably, during this time period, one of the best teams. He made the 1974 World Cup playing for Italy. Unfortunately, the Lazio team was known for having extremely far right-wing beliefs that led them to carry guns at all times.
Ugh.
Yeah, so the locker room was actually kind of split between people who were cool with the guns, people who weren't cool, but through the power of soccer and the Golden Angel, they stuck together, they played, they won, but the people that did carry the guns were pretty reckless, and they just shot for the fun of it. And this culminates on January 18th, 1977, when the Golden Angel had the bright idea of staging a robbery as a prank with two of his friends on another friend's jewelry store. Oh, so they covered their faces, shouted, "This is a stick-up," which was met by owner Bruno Tabocchini pointing a shotgun at them, as Tabocchini was robbed 2 weeks earlier and feared it would happen again. One of the Golden Angel's friends decided, "Hey, this is probably a bad idea. I should put my weapon down and put my hands up." And the Golden Angel kept provoking him, saying, "This is a robbery." And Tabocchini met him with a slug in the chest, and he died 30 minutes later.
Oh, my God.
So the Golden Angel's final words were, "It's just a prank. It's just a prank." So this is definitely the middle of the Venn diagram on both these guys, man. Of when fucking around meets finding out.
Wow. Oh, that's good. That's probably my favorite death in the history of TH Fantasy Podcast. That's number one. That was outstanding.
Those are my 77s.
All right, Ryan, I'm going to do my 77, all right?
Okay.
So I struggled. I'm not going to lie. I struggled hard this week. I found a lot of good stuff, and none of it was 77. But I found a cool like little backdoor into like a pretty fun list. So this is what I'm going to start with. A play in a 1977 game between the Denver Broncos and the Oakland Raiders. It was an ass-whipping. The Broncos beat the defending champs 30-7 to start the season 5-0. So they were up 14-7 before halftime, and the Broncos lined up to kick a field goal, and they ran a fake. They threw a pass to their kicker, Jim Turner, who scored a 25-yard touchdown, and they went up 21-7.
Damn.
This notable play is my 77, because Jim Turner, the kicker, who was said by reporter Woody Page that he ran the 100-yard dash in roughly 3 days, was 36 years old when he caught his first ever touchdown reception on his first ever catch. He is the oldest player in NFL history at the time of his first touchdown catch. So for my 77, I'm going to go through the players who hold the record for either the oldest or youngest player to do something, and I'll add a fun fact about each one.
Is this a scouting prospect for Aaron Rodgers on his next team?
It could be. It could be. We got some fun stuff here. All right. The oldest player to ever kick their first point after touchdown was Doug Flutie, a drop kick, when he was 43 years old. So my fun fact for Doug Flutie is not only does he sell boner pills, but he was infamous for his Hail Mary in college, drop kicked this extra point just for fun in a random game, and was the Canadian Football League's MVP a record 6 times.
Damn. I'm not going to say it's too late for us to join sports, but we can do it.
Yeah. Oh, dude, we got some good ones here. The oldest player to ever kick their first field goal was Mose Kelch. He joined the Pittsburgh Pirates in 1933, and at the age of 36, was older than Art Rooney, who owned the team.
What?
Whitey Wooden was an offensive lineman who must have fumbled or something. Player to score their first career touchdown at 36. He was a guard for the Packers, and he never left Wisconsin in his entire life. Sonny Jurgensen was 39 years old when he caught his first career pass, which makes sense because he was a quarterback. I know in baseball they talk about the dead ball era, but I kind of forgot that there was an era in the NFL considered that way too, before the law, like the rules were changed to allow for more accommodation of the passing game. And Sonny Jurgensen was considered like the best quarterback of the dead ball era. Listen to this shit. He is in the team Hall of Fame, like the Ring of Honor, for both the Eagles and Washington, yet he's not in the NFL Hall of Fame.
Wow.
That's really bizarre.
Tom Brady is the oldest player in NFL history for the following. Have a rushing touchdown. Have multiple rushing touchdowns in a game. He's the oldest player to have a 300-yard, 400-yard, and 500-yard passing yard game. He's the oldest player to start a Super Bowl. He's the oldest player to have a perfect passer rating in a game. However, my fun fact is that he's not the oldest player to throw a touchdown pass. That goes to George Blanda, who did it at 47 years and 88 days old.
Suck it, Tom Brady.
Yeah, time to unretire, you old bitch.
Right? That's it. He's going to listen to our podcast. He's going to come out of retirement now.
You got to kiss your son two more times.
He'll be what? He'll be 47 this year, right? Or no?
No, he's 45 right now.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so Lou the Toe Groza, who I'm like 99% sure Ryan's covered at one point, is the oldest player to throw his first completion at 42 years of age.
His first completion?
Yes. The Toe was the first ever Sporting News NFL MVP in 1954 as a kicker. He was also a surgical technician in the Pacific Theater during World War II and definitely saw some shit.
Damn.
Andy Livingston is the youngest player in NFL history to score a touchdown at 20 years and 53 days old. Fun fact about Andy Livingston, he didn't graduate high school, played at Phoenix College, was given a hardship exemption by the league so he could leave college early, was drafted by the Bears at 19, and was a Pro Bowl running back in 1969 as a member of the Saints.
Damn, dude.
So that's my 77 is a bunch of weird firsts and oldest achievements in the NFL.
Okay, dude, we're a geriatric podcast, right? We support the old folks here.
Yeah, let me get in your will.
So let's take a little trip down memory lane. I don't know about you guys, but when I was growing up, you know, there was this actor, Jim Varner, who played in all these Ernest Goes to Whatever movies.
I love Jim Varney, dude. Ernest is a part of my childhood, bro. You know what I mean, Vern?
Ernest Scared Stupid, Ernest Goes to Jail.
Sure.
But let's talk about a guy that was part of Ernest Goes to Camp. All right?
Okay.
Former NFL football player. And at the time when we were children, I probably didn't think this guy was a football player, but he was huge at the time. Someone who lived a short life, but played in the NFL, Mr. Lyle Elzado.
All right, let's go.
One of the first sports players in the 80s and 90s to publicly announce that he was basically on anabolic steroids for, you know, most of his life, you know, probably from college until he died, and that's part of the reason he died. Born in Brooklyn, New York.
Hey.
He actually had some weird stuff in college. Like, he wasn't... Maybe he just wasn't on roids yet, but... it says, upon not receiving a college scholarship offer, Elzado played for Kilgore College, a community college in Kilgore, Texas. I don't know how he made it to Texas, being from Brooklyn, but he ended up in the South. After 2 years, he was asked to leave the team, not because of anything he did, but or like being an asshole or anything, but it said he befriended a black teammate, and they don't take kindly down to that in Texas, I guess.
They don't take kindly to that.
He then after that, after he got kicked off, he went to a small town in South Dakota, Yankton College. Which, if I don't know if you know South Dakota, Yankton is a really, really small town just on the border of Nebraska and South Dakota.
Dude, I'm learning more and more about Ryan and his love of geography the more episodes we do together.
I love geography. It's all I do is look at maps all day.
Yeah, if you play any sort of trivia game and it's a geography thing and you're going against Ryan, you're just
So, like I said, he went to this small town, Yankton College in South Dakota. And he was playing for I don't even know what division this is, the NAIA at the time. He was noticed by Denver Broncos coach and scout Stan Jones, having been taken off the road by automobile trouble, decided to pass the time at nearby Montana Tech. All right.
Okay. Big city.
Montana Tech's coaches were showing him films of their star running back, Don Heater, but Jones was actually impressed by the unknown defensive lineman, Alzado, squaring off against Montana Tech's offense and passed back a favorable report to the team. So that led to the Broncos ultimately drafting Alzado in the 1971 draft.
Those are the best stories because the draft back then is like, you know, like 34 rounds or something stupid like that.
He got his BA in physical education from Yankton College.
Okay.
He went back after his rookie season to finish his degree.
My man.
He was an amateur boxer and actually had an exhibition match at the height of his career against Muhammad Ali.
Oh shit. As like a tune-up for Ali or something like that?
I don't know. Yeah, it was. I couldn't believe when I read that.
That's awesome.
So yeah, I played with the Broncos for a while. First season, 13 sacks, 80 tackles. Not bad. And that's 72, so that was before they kept track of sacks, right?
Yes. 81 is when it starts, I believe.
So he was playing defensive end for a while, and then in 1975 season, they moved him to defensive tackle. He responded with 91 tackles and 7 sacks.
Sheesh.
Wow.
Ryan's got the meaty men today.
And the Broncos actually were 6-8 that year, so they weren't even that good. 76, he blew out his knee and missed the entire season.
Was he on the Broncos in 77?
Yeah, it was since the 77 season was the most successful in franchise history. The Broncos had one of the best defenses. They went 12-2 and beat the Steelers and the Raiders in the playoffs to reach Super Bowl 12. I hate Roman numerals.
Yeah, but wait, before you go on, if he played on the 77 Broncos, that means he was on the field when that kicker scored his first NFL touchdown, because my play was on the 77 Broncos.
How do we always do something or it ties into something that I can't believe it.
There's literally no, to pull back the curtain, there's no agreement beforehand. We literally will just off the rip. These are our guys. If there's overlap, right, there's overlap. And then somehow there's some miraculous way that all these circles fucking line up.
So in 79, he ended up going to the Cleveland Browns for a little bit. Only was there for 2 or 3 years, and then went over to the Raiders to finish out the end of his career. I think he played 13 seasons.
Damn.
Or no, 71 to 85, so 14. I don't know. The Raiders took a chance on him because the Browns really didn't like him. I don't know. This was like the middle of his roid rage years because it says that he grew up in kind of a broken home with the alcoholic father and stuff. So he would take out a lot of his aggression on the field. But people would compare him to like a gentle bear when you're off the field. But when you're on the field, you did not want to mess with him.
Love that.
Let's talk about ESPN talking about his style of play. One word, violent. a combative player known for his short temper. Inspired the league rule against throwing a helmet after having done so to an opponent's helmet.
Dude, I bet you in his head he was like, fuck you, dad.
It's like Waterboy.
Defensive end Greg Townsend said that, like I said earlier, he had a split personality. He was the nicest guy off the field. But when you were on the field, he was someone you didn't want to mess with.
Terrifying.
He went on to retire in 85, and I think he was still doing roids and stuff. I don't know, you guys remember Ernest Goes to Camp? So he plays like the construction worker that like at the end has the big showdown with the tractor and stuff. Maybe you know what? Maybe we'll watch that movie
for the movie.
That'd be awesome.
Because I probably haven't watched that in 20 years.
I'm looking at his IMDb. He plays the muscle in every movie.
Yeah. It says pursued acting career in movies, television, appearing mostly in youth-oriented comedy and adventure roles. Let's see. Ernest Goes to Camp, Mike Hammer, Murder Takes All, Club Fed, Neon City.
Tell me he was on like an episode of Walker, Texas Ranger.
I don't know if Walker, because he died in 92. He only lived 1949 to 1992. And like I said, he was one of the first major U.S. sports figures to admit using anabolic steroids. In the last year of his life, he was battling a brain tumor that eventually caused his death. And Alzado asserted that his steroid abuse directly led to that fatal illness. I don't think anyone's going to really know, but it's probably a good assumption.
Yeah, I think they cover him in the documentary Bigger, Stronger, Faster about steroid use. I think he's like part of that movie. And maybe. I think they talk about his death and like how, like you were saying, his heart got enlarged. And
you see this guy and he's freaking huge. And then you see like when, like the year before he died, and he's like a shell of himself because he obviously stopped taking drugs and shit.
Deflated balloon.
Yeah. He's quoted in Sports Illustrated saying, "I started taking anabolic steroids in 1969 and never stopped. Now I'm sick and I'm scared. It was addicting, mentally addicting. 90% of the athletes I know are on this stuff. We're not born to be 300 pounds or jump 30 feet. I became very violent on the field. Off it too, I did things only crazy people do. Once in 1979, in Denver, a guy sideswiped my car and I chased him up and down hills through the neighborhoods. I did things like that a lot. I'd chase a guy, pull him out of his car, beat the hell out of him, but look at me now." He's referring to his horrible, how he looked before he died. He said, "I wobble when I walk and sometimes have to hold on to somebody. You have to give me time to answer questions because I have trouble remembering things."
Okay, so like, this is obviously, you know, this is sad, but like, I feel like to some extent he's conflating the symptoms of steroid abuse with the symptoms of CTE.
It's a perfect circle of a lot of trauma for this person.
Yeah.
And it says that the role of steroids may have played a role in Alzado's death, but it is the subject of controversy, like you said, Tony, because who knows the amount of crap that was going on ahead with CTE or...
Right.
And yes, Shane, you are right. 2008, he was profiled in Bigger, Stronger, Faster. There
you That's go. A good movie.
There you go.
So yeah. Someone to learn some life lessons from, what not to do in terms of steroids. Don't do them.
They are bad.
This is an anti-steroid.
So, yeah. And it's if with his numbers and stuff too, he should have been in the Hall of Fame, but because of his obvious
honesty,
he's not. But yeah, Mr. Lyle Alzado.
Damn,
that was a good one.
That was a good one. What a good way to end it. Let's take a break. We're going to come back. We're going to have our first film review. And we're going to talk some Dynasty buys and sells. All right. We'll see you soon. And goodbye.
Someone took me to a restaurant and I had to eat something fast. I ordered me some chicken. They gave me alligator ass.
And we're back.
We're back in black. Black Sunday.
Sunday.
Black Sunday, that is.
So we watched Black Sunday kind of as an homage to our episode last week. And I want to know your thoughts. Before you go on your thoughts, I want to just say this movie came out in 1977, and the tagline, I don't know if you guys saw the tagline. The tagline is, "They counted on living in a world without heroes. They forgot about him."
That's right. I will say that I actually enjoyed this movie. It reminded me of, because it actually had a lot more star-studded characters in it. It reminded me of a 90s action film, but in the 70s. Obviously, not as many special effects.
Oh, but, God, those effects, man.
Yeah, but Bruce Dern played a great, like, the storyline on it was freaking really good. He's a former Air Force blimp pilot, and they phase out blimps in the Air Force, and now he doesn't know have anywhere to go. But guess what? Goodyear's got this blimp, and they fly it everywhere. So now he is a Goodyear blimp driver. I loved his backstory in that. It was so good.
That must have been the component of the movie where I zoned out, because the beginning was really like engaging to me, where I was like, oh, this is sick. It's like a James Bond movie. And then it's like it got like weirdly slow, and I was like, what is happening?
It was in like the first third of the movie, I think. He's talking to someone on the blimp about, was he on the blimp? I don't know. But he was telling someone about how he's a retired Air Force blimp pilot, and then they phased him out. He had nothing left to do.
It was an exposition dump.
Right. Yeah. That scene when he's being interviewed by like that therapist guy.
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about? He's like, my wife left me, sir. My kids left me, sir. Like
nothing left to lose, baby.
Have you seen the movie Observe and Report?
Yeah, that's a dark comedy.
Yeah, is that the Coen brothers?
No, that's
a Seth Rogen movie.
Seth Rogen and Ray Liotta and Anna Faris.
Oh, maybe I didn't see that.
It that scene where he's being interviewed reminds me of the scene when Seth Rogen is applying to be a police officer. And you start to realize like exactly the level of person you're dealing with.
Yeah, that's a good scene.
I have a fun fact for you guys. The novel that this movie was an adaptation of was written by Thomas Harris, who wrote all of the Hannibal Lecter novels.
There's more than one?
I think so, yeah.
There's at least two.
He's only written two books in his career that didn't involve Hannibal Lecter. This one was his first.
Can we talk for a second about how like their plan is just to make, like, first of all, the gun, the thing that he makes?
I had the same exact thought as that, because when it went off in the fucking ocean, I was like, what a cool concept, but what a piss poor execution.
Yeah. The fact that they think that they can just attach a boat to the bottom of the blimp. I was shocked how that worked out. I was like, how are they going to get past security with a, oh, I got boat stuff for the blimp. Like, what are you talking about?
Okay, so when they detonated that like nail bomb thing in the barn,
that was cool.
And dude, as soon as they were the interior shots of the barn after that, it looked like the Corn Freak on a Leash video.
Yeah,
with all the bullet holes through it. Oh, it was fucking sick. I was waiting for Dern to start scatting.
This is gonna put me on a list, but like I think that's just like inefficient terrorism, the way that technical bomb was made, right? Because like they're trying to fly it over the middle of the stadium, but like when you see the final shot, all the shots go downward, where it's like, don't you want it to go sideways like a pipe bomb instead of like right to the field?
I'm assuming that was why the boat thing, because it's like a V and some of them go up and some of them, you know what I'm saying?
I guess it was just poorly translated in the final shot, because you can't show that in the ocean,
right?
Can I just say, there was that same scene where he's talking to the doctor, where he said that being a POW like makes you gay.
What? I don't remember. Right.
He's like, there's an increased chance of homosexuality and impotence for people that return from being a POW.
Really?
And I was like, damn, dude, I never knew that. That's crazy. So I looked it up. I couldn't find anything, but like, it might be out there. I don't know.
So John McCain was gay. Confirmed.
Also, like, hell yeah, free Palestine. Can we just say?
That was like the first 15 minutes of the movie. I was like, as soon as I was like, Tony's going to love this shit.
Oh, yeah, dude. Like, I love throughout the movie that they're like, now this terrorist act, I know you do that for the Israeli government, but they're trying to do it to us.
Well, that was like the wild part to me in the beginning, is like when you're committing war crimes, right? Like you're going into this place and you're killing people like Black Ops style. Just shoot the fucking woman in the shower too. If you just followed through with the mission, we wouldn't have this entire movie.
Right.
Because he saw some tits.
Yep.
It was a weird scene. He was like, those is nice. Well,
okay, the weirdest part of that scene was the score.
It was like a weirdly upbeat. It was
It reminded me of like almost Benny Hill.
Well, okay, it was John Williams in his infancy. Okay.
Right.
You gotta give him a little slack. He was experimenting a little too much early on in his career.
It's weird to watch chase scenes with no music behind them. And they did that a lot.
That's true.
But didn't Star Wars come out in 77? How do you go in the same year of doing fucking episode 4 and then Black Sunday of composition of like, hey, some Benny Hill to lifelong known.
What I was reading on IMDb was that like the studio was expecting, because this movie was super well received during test screenings. They thought this was going to be the box office draw for the company that year, not Star Wars.
Really?
Yeah. Because everything IMDb says, I totally believe. okay, I got to say, I have some criticisms here. Dahlia and Michael Lander somehow managed to have like negative chemistry.
Yeah, like, there is a weird. It felt like one of those movies where you could tell they're not shot at the same time. They like superimpose each other of like, hey, this is how this person's acting. This is how you should respond. So there's like no actual like they've learning how to talk for the first time.
Right. I watch. You know, the description of the movie was like he's obsessed and they're so in love and he's going to commit this act of terrorism because he's so in love, and like it just kind of seems like they hate each other.
Yeah. Maybe there's like off tension shit where like the guy was like really actually like pro Israel.
Right. Like it was like they were just, you know, she walks into the hotel. Where have you been? I've been worried sick about you. And she just spends the whole time like not liking this dude.
Yeah.
Gore was good though. There was some solid gore.
Yeah. Especially for that era of movie and like a main era action film. Like usually that's kind of like it's subtext or like kind of hidden where that was just like, hey, watch this fucking pipe bomb go off.
Yep. I kind of wish we had some all 22 film on some of that stuff that was going on.
Yeah, man. Just for me, I think if they shaved like 45 minutes off for me, because like the beginning was really good and the end was really engaging where I was like this middle portion, I get it, but I don't, sometimes I don't need a reasoning for the action hero. Right. Like Ryan said, just give me, he's a POW. He's gay because of the war, and now he just wants to save America on a blimp. That's all I need, right?
Dude, I'm saying, like, I ended up giving this movie a 6 out of 10 because 2/3 of the acts were awesome.
Well, I'm giving it 7.5 out of 10 because I'm a sucker for, like 70s, 80s, and 90s action movies.
I will say though, I love an action movie where the final sequence happens with an explosion and they just roll the credits. It's like that's like the true best ending to a movie ever. Death Wish 3,
if only it were faster though, because like this is a blimp and like at a certain point it's like getting slowly closer to the stadium. It almost felt like I was telling Tony on last Sunday on his time, it felt like that scene from Austin Powers when the steamroller's coming at him and the guy's like 100 yards away and he just is screaming at it to stop, but it's
and like
so slowly.
And like nobody in the stadium's like freaking out. It's like, hey, here's this at eye level blimp slowly approaching you.
Yeah,
and
no one's
like, huh, that's weird.
No one said like, hey, that blimp shouldn't be that close. Like you have like at least 3 minutes from when that blimp is that close to get out of the way.
Yeah, you can get a hot dog, hit the bathroom, and bounce before it shows up.
So I read that Goodyear, part of them allowing them to use a Goodyear blimp was that it couldn't be shown actually hurting anybody.
Okay.
So that's why you don't see anybody getting chopped up by propeller blades or, you know, burning.
Why we had the 7-minute sequence of him trying to line up the hook.
Oh, my God. So long.
Yeah.
Oh, cut to that stadium. Cut to him trying to connect the hook. Like, man, this secret agent shit's fucking hard, right?
That was badass, though, when he was on that hook on the helicopter. That was freaking awesome.
It was, okay, you know what, like, I think Shane said it right. If you trimmed a good amount of time off this movie, It would be like people would remember it a lot better.
It'd be a cult classic for sure. Because like, how many NFL movies are actually out there along with NFL terrorism? It's like Ace Ventura, and that's it.
Right. Yeah.
Last Boy Scout. That's really all I can think of. I mean, there's that one Dark Knight thing, but that's more like a side piece story than like focusing on. But there's always, if you recall, the Jean-Claude Van Damme movie, Sudden Death, which has the NHL and shit in it.
Yeah, I've never seen that movie. True.
That's a hockey game. Oh, you never seen Sudden Death?
I'll add it to my list.
It's a solid 90s action flick. Not going to blow you away. But
I'm not a Van Damme guy. He just like never stuck with me because I think I just like missed that era. And then when I went back, I was like, ah, he's like too ripped and like too athletic, right? We're like, I'm a Steven Seagal guy, even though he sucks just because he's just a fat piece of garbage. I'm like, I want to watch this fat guy beat up 80 people and make out with three women.
Right.
Oh, man. We used to play so much Seagal on this podcast. What happened to us?
I think it was, no. I mean, my review is it's fine. That's like, that's how I kind of encompass it. There are good components of it.
Yeah. I enjoyed it more than I didn't. So
I'm firmly in the middle between you two with that. I had a good time. I also recognize a lot of it was like, all right, I don't need this. All right, so let's do our next part. I want to talk some dynasty, some non-rookies while we got time. And I want to do buys and sells. So we'll each go around and we'll all do a quarterback, and then we'll all do a running back, and then we'll all do a wide receiver, and then we'll all do a tight end, and you'll tell me your player. You'll tell me if you're buying or selling, and you'll tell me why. Let's start with quarterback. Shane, you want to go first?
Yeah, do you want me to do my buy first or my sell first?
Your call, dealer's choice.
I'm going with the Heat right off the gate. I'm buying Baker Mayfield.
So
my lens through this is I'm a competitor, right? I'm spending my capital because I view that I need to win now as opposed to I need to let things quote-unquote bake. So I chose Baker Mayfield because we went off a DLF, and Baker Mayfield can be bought for like a third round pick.
Fuck yeah.
And like in a super flex format, you're never going to start him unless you have to. But the depth matters at that position as deep as you go into the season, right? Like we talked about last week, I had people who only had two quarterbacks. One guy got hurt. They lost the championship because they didn't have a starting quarterback. Granted, Baker's ceiling isn't 35 points. He might get you 16, but he has shown in the past that he can put up 20 points.
And you recall, and Ryan should recall as well, that this NFL season broke the record for most quarterbacks to start a game. So injuries hit the quarterback position hard this year. So Baker, I like Baker as a third quarterback.
I think he's a fine mitigated risk for a third rounder, right? Like, because in the DLF ranking, he's priced around Chark, Mike Gesicki, Cordell Patterson, Zach Ertz, Alan Lazard, and Alexander Mattison. All these dudes who I'm like, okay, Chark is what, third option on his team? Gesicki, we don't know what he's going to do. CPAT maybe has half a season left. Ertz is coming back from ACL tear. Alan Lazard got paid a bunch of money. Good for him, but I still think he's ass.
Yeah, he sucks.
And Alexander Mattison isn't going to be lead back because he's been there for 3 years. And even if they're going to trade or cut Cook, I still think they draft a replacement or they find someone to share that time with.
Okay. I like Baker Mayfield as a third quarterback. Ryan, you have a quarterback you want to talk about?
I am selling Lamar Jackson.
Oh, okay.
I'm selling Lamar Jackson in Dynasty. For me, just my own personal opinion, the narrative seems too uncertain right now. And I don't like if he stays in Baltimore, I don't like what that team has done to help him out in the passing game. Because that guy's eventually going to have to start running less. And it's not looking good in Baltimore. And if he goes, I don't even know where he could possibly end up. The list is too long right now. But I don't like the uncertainty of him going to another team either. Because they're not going to be ready. They're not going to be as ready to absorb a predominantly run-heavy quarterback.
You got to admit, with every day that passes, the likelihood of quarterbacks that could be traded goes down.
Yep. Right. And the only reason I'm selling him right now is because of that uncertainty. And I feel like you could still, you could get some opinions on the other side and influence them who might like Lamar Jackson right now.
Yeah, and I think that's a very good point.
You could get some good picks out of him.
Because what was your offer, Tony, for buying Lamar this week?
I sent 108, 202, 2024 first, and a 2025 first for Lamar and got rejected.
Yeah, that's what, 5 picks right there? So,
well, I tried to pay premium, and I was trying to get, like, okay value. Well, actually, for him, but, like, I was like, if we do this now, I will give you this offer. And he's like, it's not enough. So I'm like, all right, well, you're going to overvalue your guy. Like, that's fine.
And, like, right. To me, I feel like that you're also mitigating or you're taking on some of the risk, too, because, like Ryan said, if wherever he's going to go, who knows what happens? He might sit the year out. We don't know what happens, right? Like, you could just burn 3 first, be like, hey, dude, here's 101 for 3 years in a row. Congratulations. I would take that trade, be like, hey, listen, Lamar is a top 10 quarterback in potential output, theoretically. But, like, that return is too good for me to pass up, especially if my team is, like, middle of the road where you can fill out your depth really well.
Ryan is selling Lamar Jackson.
Plus the threat of Cam Newton coming in because he's gonna come back to the NFL and back up all these quarterbacks.
Okay. I honestly think it would be cool if Cam came over to the Bears and kind of like mentored Fields for a little bit.
But like, don't let him sit on the don't let him touch the field, right? Because like we saw those Patriot games, and my God. Like I'm not, this was before I started watching tape, but I was like, this guy clearly is not good anymore.
Still is playing hurt, you know?
Yeah.
All right. So I got a quarterback here. He's a buy, and I'm going to go a little spicy too. I'm buying Trey Lance.
Dude, were you on Twitter today?
Yeah. I saw the slow-mo replay, but I wrote this before I went on Twitter. He is, according to DLF, Superflex quarterback 13. You like Anthony Richardson, right? Can I interest you in Trey Lance?
In a better system.
He's only 2 years older than Richardson. He'll be 23 when the season starts. He was hurt. I get it, man. Like, I know he got hurt, but he still has all of the upside that you're looking for. People will say on one hand, oh, Konami Code quarterbacks are so important, but like, why aren't you buying Trey Lance right now? I think there's a chance that he gets moved. I would love to see him get traded before the draft. Maybe after the draft for a team that's struck out on the top guys. So I'm thinking like you were saying earlier, mock draft that you saw with Tennessee moving up to 3. What if they trade 11 for Trey Lance?
Because like I was reading today, apparently Shanahan didn't want Trey Lance. That was a GM decision where Shanahan wanted to spend 3 firsts for Jimmy G 2.0, right?
Right.
I mean, I'll never know what San Francisco does because whatever they say in the media is always contradictory. They're like, they like to play games, which I appreciate, right? Like, you should fuck with the media.
Yep. So I am buying Trey Lance with the expectation that he's going to go somewhere and start. He will start games this year. He doesn't have a ton of game experience, but he does have NFL experience. He's already been in the league for 2 years. So I want him over the players ranked around him like Kirk Cousins, Deshaun Watson, and I think he's right around the same, maybe even a little higher for me than Dak.
I could see that. And like, I think you could also buy him cheaper than Dak because there's that uncertainty and he hasn't technically really played NFL football in 2 years, right? He played what, 2 games in the beginning of the season. And I think someone who's holding might be reaching the apex of this is just too much. If I can cash out on 107.
Sure.
Fuck it. I'll take it. Right. Like I'll just re-roll with Will Levis or I picked up depth and I believe Purdy will be the guy. Right.
Ryan, what do you think? You like Trey Lance?
No, I didn't. I don't like Trey Lance at all.
Fair enough. All right, Shane, you had a sell, a quarterback sell, right?
I do, and it's our resident hated sunning butthole Aaron Rodgers.
Okay.
Yeah.
QB 15. He's priced around Mike Evans, both of the Kirks, Damian Pierce, Alvin Kamara, Jahan Dotson, and Brandon Ayuk.
Like, honestly, what's taking so long, like, for this Jets deal to happen? What the hell?
Just remember when I said a month ago that he's staying in Green Bay. It's fucking happening, bro.
That's why my buy was going to be Jordan Love, and I was like, nope, he's going to stay because they will not come to a consensus, and he's just going to finish out his final year in Green Bay. My bias was that he looked washed. He's up in the air where he plays, and if he does go to the Jets, I don't even think he makes the playoffs, and he just mentally gives up and stops playing seriously. And then Green Bay's not going to draft any more offensive weapons while he's there out of spite, and I just think he's not set up for success in this next year, especially like where he's at. Because I sold him last year. I could not sell him. I was like, I want a first. He's a starting quarterback. He can still give you some juice. Right. Nobody would budge. So I ended up flipping him for Alec Pierce. Not the best trade, but like I was on a rebuild and I was like, if this is the best thing that the market can dictate, I'll take it.
Sure.
But I would rather have Mike Evans as a competitor than Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah. Because I think where's the funniest place for Aaron Rodgers to play next year? Because it might be Green Bay.
Like I said earlier, he goes down to Tampa Bay. He goes somewhere with a bay.
He's a bay man.
Yeah. I mean, maybe they want him in San Francisco, right?
The Bay Area.
Because he likes that team. He's better than Jimmy G. But I don't know, man. I like you said, I think he just stays in Green Bay and just has a wet fart at the end of his career.
God damn it. Another year in the NFC North with him. God, I was hoping he would be gone.
See, but you can beat him now. Like,
yeah,
you can,
I want him back.
You can piss on his grave as he's going down. Like, take the title back. And
that's a better way of looking at it.
Yeah, you gotta stun on him.
Yeah. All right, Ryan, tell me about your running back.
I am selling Nick Chubb. Same reason as Les. You can probably get a lot for him right now, and he's 26, 27. So you might get one good year out of him. Someone that's trying to maybe make it to the championship next year might bite on that to give them a little bit of extra nudging into the playoffs.
I think Nick Chubb is like a lot of fun for redraft this year. I think Nick Chubb could end up putting up real good numbers.
It depends what they do in free agency, or not free agency, but with the draft, right? Because what's their wide receiver room? Amari Cooper, Elijah Moore, that dude who just tore his ACL, and then Austin Hooper? Is he still
in? No, it's and we'll talk about this in a bit. It's Cooper, Donovan Peoples-Jones, Elijah Moore, David Bell.
That's right. They got Elijah Moore.
David Bell, David Njoku are their pass catchers.
I just sold Elijah Moore this week.
I get it.
For 202.
That's a better return for Elijah Moore than I would have expected you to get.
I thought the same thing. I was thinking about it, and I was like, you know what? I got this player for Darren Waller. This is already a win. And he's going to be number two on an offense that I don't really want to watch, and I can get somebody better.
All right, Ryan is selling Nick Chubb.
What would you sell Nick Chubb for? I know you're trying to sell him in your Dynasty League, but like, where was he ranked in DLF on this, like his RB what? Like RB 11?
Let's see.
He's RB 8.
Yeah, okay. 8.
Because Derrick Henry was really low in that list.
Yeah, Derrick Henry's RB 18.
Holy shit.
Wow. He's all the way down there.
Yeah.
Dude, you break your foot one time.
Right.
Fantasy analysts think you're garbage.
Right. All right, who's next?
I'll go.
Yeah, go nuts.
I'm buying Miles Sanders.
Okay. All right.
According to DLF, RB 22. Priced around Sutton, Mixon, Ayuk, the Kirks, Daniel Jones, Calvin Ridley, and Mike Williams. So my reasoning was, as of today, Easter weekend, there he has no competition for touches outside of Chuba Hubbard, who we have seen can do literally nothing on the field.
It's true.
He's going to be leaned on in the offensive scheme based on Frank Reich and a rookie quarterback to kind of take the pressure off, help them learn the scheme, learn the flux of the NFL. They drafted a pretty good O-lineman last year. He doesn't really have the check down passing you want to see it.
No.
But I think he averages like 30 pass catches a year, which is, I think he'll maintain, especially when he's not in a system that, unless they draft Richardson, where the quarterback is not vulturing the goal line touches as well as, because he was competing with Jalen Hurts for the goal line carries, which you're never going to win that one. In 2022, he saw his career high of snap percentages, yards, touchdowns. His yards per carry did go down, but I don't think the scheme really dictated him to be a yak kind of guy, where he wasn't able to really extend the field because they had the incorporation of AJ Brown, the evolution of Hurts to actually throw the ball, so they didn't have to rely on the run game as much.
Yeah.
With him so much. So I think it was a competitor's price of buying somebody who I think a competitor should have as kind of a, even as a 1 year, you can kind of get a sneaky value on a bad team. Right.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, look at Damian Pierce, right? So I actually have a buy running back and it's in the same range right there. My buy is Rashad White. Running back 24 on DLF. Now, this is a deeply, deeply unsexy play. And I'll tell you why I'm trying to get him. Because Tampa Bay has a ton of holes on their team. And
we talked about this like 2 weeks ago.
And I don't think that they spend any high assets on a running back, right? Like everything I've seen says they're going defense.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense for them to spend capital on the most replaceable position.
Right. So the offensive line was actually like all right last year, but they lost quite a few games to injury, and that kind of screwed with all the running backs in Tampa Bay. So I also think that this offense looks a lot different now that Brady is gone, and White has also shown the ability to be a good pass receiver out of the backfield. And I think he will be the alpha in a heavier volume offense that should allow him 20 touches a week. The other dudes right around him in terms of running backs are Miles Sanders, A.J. Dillon, Damian Pearson, Alvin Kamara. And I would take White over all of them at this moment.
I think that's a good thing because Kamara probably won't play part of these games.
Right.
And like you said, he's sneaky where he's got a kind of a stank on him based on Tampa Bay. Because, I mean, we were slandering him 2 weeks ago, I believe, is what it was.
Yep. Sure were. Sometimes, you know, you gotta cover your ass. So I can just back myself up no matter what happens.
Yeah, there was a Rashid White. Sorry, it's Rashad, sorry. I keep doing the Waleed thing where he's incorporated in my brain. For Rashad White and CPAT in one of my leagues this week. It was 110 for Rashad and CPAT.
That's going to be a no from me, dog. That's way too much.
Oh, no. Sorry. It was CPAT and 110 for Rashad White.
Oh. Nope. Still don't want it. I'm not giving up 110 for Rashad White.
Mid-second's fine. You know what I mean? Like, I'll pay that price. But, yeah, 110 can be somebody higher ceiling, in my opinion.
All right. Let's move on. Wide receiver time. Ryan, who's your wide receiver? And are you buying or selling?
I'm going to buy me some Chris Olave.
Ooh, that's a pricey man.
Derek Carr to Chris Olave, it's going to be magical this year.
Chris Olave is wide receiver 9 in Superflex.
And in the situation for this one dynasty, I just got like 4 first-round picks. I know I'm probably going to have to give one up for him.
Probably maybe 2, I would say.
Yeah, he's expensive. Yeah.
You know what you could do, Ryan? You have an offer in your inbox for Tyreek Hill, but...
Oh, really?
There's a chance whoever has Olave, a Tyreek Hill for Chris Olave, 1-for-1 swap, I think that's a reasonable move.
Interesting.
What do you think, Shane? You get at least 3 years at Tyreek, because he's retiring the same time TH Fantasy's retiring in 2025.
Yeah, forever. Yeah, Ryan, did you hear about that? He said he's going to retire in 2025, Tyreek Hill.
Really?
Yeah, so...
Which I think is good, right? Like, hey, thanks for the guarantee of 3 more years.
Right. And yeah, Ryan, I made you an offer for Tyreek Hill, but But I would love to see you pull off a Tyreek for Chris Olave, because I know you want some shares of Olave real bad.
Yeah, I'm really high on him this year.
I tried to buy him last year before his breakout. I think I offered like Keenan Allen before his injury, Keenan Allen, Gibson, and something else for Olave. And the guy's like, that's really close, man. But like, I'm an Ohio State guy. And I was like, fuck, dude, I hate this homerism.
Shane, give me your buy, and then I'll go, and then you can do your sell.
Okay. I'm buying Brandon Cooks.
Ooh.
I learned my lesson over summer. You don't doubt the man. All right. Like I said, I wanted
to. He goes everywhere.
I know. And I think this is going to be the best offense that he's played on in a while, at least, since he was in like 2018 on the Rams. I believe it was his career year when I was looking at the stats. So Brandon Cooks is ranked wide receiver 48 by DLF. Near Purdy, Antonio Gibson, Jimmy G, Rondale Moore, Kareem Hunt, David Njoku, Dalton Schultz, and Romeo Doubs. And I would rather have Brandon Cooks as a competitor than any one of those players, because all those guys around there have red flags. Even if Brandon Cooks has one more year in the league of, or even one more year of elite production, the price of entry of me as a competitor to get a wide receiver two or three, or even possibly a flex position for like a mid second and have that like ceiling on a really high passing offense is something I want a part of.
You like Cooks as a contender. If you were selling Cooks, what would you ask for?
I would take probably any second. I think that's like the maximum value you could get, especially like with his age. And like, this actually leans into my sell on my running back was Tony Pollard, because I know McCarthy wants to pound the rock. He says he wants to pound the rock, and they're probably going to try to lean on a new guy. But having a new player in the system, even though running back is like the most easily transitionable position from college to the NFL, I still think it's going to take some adjusting time. And especially with Tony Pollard coming back from injury, I think they're going to have to lean on the air game with Dak to throw the ball a lot more, especially with CeeDee Lamb not being double teamed every play from now on. I think it opens up the field for both guys to be more successful to spread the ball around.
Okay. I like it. Ryan, what do you think? Are you on Brandon Cooks this year?
Yeah, I like the logic. He just goes at, like, what, seven teams, eight teams already, and he does pretty well.
He's motivated this year too, because I know he was playing like ass on Houston, because he's like, I'm tired of being part of a tank. I want to be part of a competitor, and this is his best shot at the stage of his career. In my opinion.
I think you're right. Okay, so I got to clear my throat. Jeez, they know what I'm about to say, right? My sell is DK Metcalf, wide receiver 11. DK Metcalf was wide receiver 17 last season. But in terms of points per game, DK was wide receiver 28. I love DK Metcalf, but I don't think things bode well for him. I mean,
I'm with you. I'm with you. I'm a DK Metcalf stan, and I'm with you.
I love Geno Smith. I love the story. I don't know. I think there's going to be a regression from that offense.
I'm going to say a slur right now. Geno Smith is mid.
Remember last year, Seattle was in the middle of a teardown. And then all of a sudden they caught lightning in a bottle. They were supposed to be a doormat team and they made the playoffs. So I think they're a down year away from just blowing it all up anyways. And I don't want to sit stuck holding the bag with DK Metcalf while they have some fucking McCown brother tank command.
It's tough too, because like their playoff success was really based on Geno bowling really hot in the beginning. And also it was really dependent on how dog shit their division was. Like the Rams just collapsed. Arizona fell apart, right? So like their only competition in that division. So they're playing bad teams for five games out of the year, right? That's seriously stat padding. But
I think
I'm with you there too, though, with DK.
I think there's a chance they take a wide receiver in the first round of this draft.
That's been mocked, JSN, frequently, right? Or Addison, where I think Tyler Lockett's time is limited, and you have a young gun. Even though DK Metcalf is very talented, I don't, like you were saying, even if they potentially go quarterback, I don't know if the young quarterback can kind of support that offense, right?
Right. So Okay, so the players right around him that I like more than DK Metcalf are T. Higgins, Drake London, and Devonta Smith. I like all three of them over DK in Dynasty.
My sell is in that tier too.
Tell me.
My sell is Debo Samuel.
Ooh, oh no.
Ranked 14 around Metcalf, Higgins, Saquon, Adams, Kupp, London, Etienne, and Kelsey. I think we saw the career pinnacle of Debo in 2021 with his rushing upside and his bolting of points from touchdowns on the goal line carries because they had literally nobody to run the ball aside from Debo. I love watching Debo play. He's fun as hell to engage with on Sunday. But I think his value has reached its apex, and this is a time to potentially cash in when you can, because I think people are starting to realize that offensive scheme is very difficult to pinpoint who's going to be successful because they have so many weapons, and Shanahan runs such a diverse offense with the acquisition of CMC, Trey Lance coming back, George Kittle being there, Brandon Ayuk being there. So if someone has to get traded, it's probably not gonna be Debo since he just signed an extension last year. Yep. It might, if it's gonna be someone, it's gonna be Ayuk, but that's, I think that 21 season was his apex of value because he was like a second round startup pick. He was multiple first rounders. And I think we're starting to see the wax. Same with DK. Like maybe we saw that dude's apex, right? Where I don't know what you would sell DK Metcalf for. I saw 104 on TTC, but I don't know if somebody would give up a Bryce Young or.
No, I don't think they would.
Same with Debo. I don't know what you get for him. 106 maybe, if you're lucky, like someone who believes in the talent still.
I could see myself, I have Debo in a league, and I could see myself selling for a mid-2024 first.
Yeah.
Throw that in, and maybe you get, what, 2024, like 104? Get some fucking Brock Bowers action.
Yeah.
Like, give me the flexibility to move up in 2024. Cause if I'm in a, you know, tight end premium, whatever, like Brock Bowers is that fucking dude.
See, I saw this interesting.
I want him.
That's Ryan's going to give everything the farm for him next year. I saw an interesting thing where the tight end premium guys were saying, even with a 1.5, you don't really want to take a tight end, even a Michael Mayer type, until like the second in this class, which I thought was like a late second, potentially like early third, because like the availability of talent and like you were talking last week of level of production takes a while. So like you can kind of lotto ticket these guys, and if you miss out, you miss out. Like you might regret it down the road of like, I should have took him with 208 instead of like Achane, but hindsight's 2020. So it was just interesting, like the level of serious tight end guys dictating where the threshold of where to take guys based on the amount of points given. Sure. Compared to like a two tight end league where that's definitely a higher premium compared to a 1.5.
Right.
Start one.
Right. Let's talk tight ends. This is what I'm most excited to hear about. Ryan's take on a dynasty tight end.
Well, I'm selling Hockenson right now.
Whoa. Because
I can get a lot for him.
That's a good point, man.
I can get a lot for him. He's only 25, and he seems to jive really well in Minnesota right now. But how long is Cousins inked for?
This year.
Not much longer, right?
They're rumored to draft Hooker at the 23rd spot through a lot of mocks that have been coming up lately.
Yeah, so he, I think he's only got one more year. I mean, he's got 2 years, but I think they have an opt-out after this year.
Yeah.
So it seemed like he had some chemistry. So that'd be a good selling point.
And you could, plus, like I said, you plus get, as of right now, there's no competition for targets. It's him and Justin Jefferson. KJ Osborne's whatever, right?
I mean, I think, you know, we've seen a lot of mocks that have Minnesota going wide receiver in the first. And I don't think they do, because I think their wide receiver two is TJ Hockenson.
Yeah, 100%.
So if you can run a three lined outside formation with KJ Osborne, TJ Hockenson, and Justin Jefferson, I think that first round pick is much easier devoted to a defense for like a defensive backfield that couldn't stop fucking anybody last year.
Sure.
So I love that sell, Ryan. I think that's a real smart play right now.
That's getting ahead of holding the bag, and I appreciate that. And I have Hawkinson in like every league too, and I think that's a wise decision.
Shane, you got a buy?
I do. I have a buy and a sell. My buy is Dallas. My buy is Dallas Goedert.
Ooh.
He's a little expensive, but I think he's worth it. He's tight end 6. He's priced around Russ, Hopkins, Elijah Moore, Matt Stafford, Gabe Davis, and Freiermuth. And I would much rather have Dallas Goedert above all those guys. Even though there is target competition between him, A.J. Brown, and Smitty, as well as Jalen Hurts' rushing ability, I think the entry point of cost, I don't know what someone would ask, but according to DLF, it's early second, late first. It's a great scheme, high octane offense, and he finished as tight end 12 in PPR last year while missing 5 games. 10 fantasy points separated tight end 12 from tight end 6.
Damn.
So he plays any one of those games, and he's automatically like tight end 8, right? Like,
oh yeah.
His value significantly increases if he is not hurt in that thing, and I believe that was like a dirty hit when that happened, or like a dirty tackle or something like that.
You know, something that I learned when we were doing the DFS show and the gambling show with Waleed this year was Dallas Goedert, similarly to what we just said with TJ Hockenson, Dallas Goedert is Philly's de facto slot receiver.
Yep.
He lines up in the slot on like over half of his pass snaps. So like he's gonna get looks. He's their third option on a given play. I like it. I like it. All right, let me give you my guy. I have a sell. I'm going to be selling David Njoku. He is tight end 9. Look, the blob is the blob. And I really don't think he's going to net you much in return. But I really think Njoku's days as a fantasy asset in Cleveland are over. The shift to the spread attack to better accommodate Watson's skills will push targets to the outside, I think. And I think Njoku's appeal is when he's lined up in the slot, which is a spot now suddenly jam-packed with Elijah Moore and David Bell, who they took in third last year. So there's some players below Njoku that I like more, like Greg Dulcich, Chig Okonkwo, and I would even go with Trey McBride at tight end 19 for David
Njoku. Yeah, I was going to say Okonkwo too is goodbye.
I think McBride is heavily undervalued right now because he got hurt, right?
Yep.
And then Zach Ertz is basically gassed. Like I think, like you were saying, man, it's like at the very worst with Njoku, you can get a high third, and then you just re-roll that with a new pick. You get a Luke Musgrave, a Sam Laporta, hell, even Darnell Washington, if you believe in the talent. But I think there's better opportunities of breaking out of the blob to be like, hey, man, this is me putting my chips on a position that I got this wide range of outcomes, and I would like to have the upside as opposed to knowing what I have.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I could see, I could easily, if I could get Trey McBride for a late second, I'm
in. I like Jelani Woods too.
I feel like you could get Jelani Woods pretty cheap this year. I think you could get Jelani Woods cheap. For like,
there's something early special third. About that guy too. You got a super
cheap. RAS score.
It's 10. It's perfect.
Shane, you got to sell?
I do. I'm sorry to you Chicago boys, but I got to sell Cole Kmet.
I think that's a good sell.
Tight end 12, priced around Dulcich, Damian Harris, Leonard Fournette, Tyler Algier, Tyler Boyd, and Desmond Ridder. Unless the passing offense explodes and Justin Fields really takes a ginormous leap in his passing ability as well as offensive scheme, I think I doubt the offensive scheme more than I do the talent of Justin Fields within his third year.
Sure.
There's too much target competition for me to believe that Cole Kmet can return from his tight end 7 finish last year in PPR because they have really revitalized that wide receiver room by adding DJ Moore. Chase Claypool is now more familiar with the offense, and Darnell Mooney will be returning from injury because at a point Cole Kmet was really the only offensive weapon besides his Justin Fields' legs and David Montgomery. So I think that was capturing lightning in a bottle of perfect circumstance for that finish. And I would love to cash out for basically Dulcich. I'd buy Fat Lenny. You know what I mean? Even though he's not going to be that guy, he might go to Dallas for cheap. You know what I mean? They want a fat boy to run the middle. Tyler Allgeier starting QB of Desmond Ridder. You probably can't get Desmond Ridder for that price, but because he's a starter this year, but in startup values, I think that's what I would do.
I think that like so much of Cole Kmet's production came when the Bears, first off, Cole Kmet had like two touchdown games. And like most of his production was like 2 weeks. And so like if you watch the Bears offense last year, production came when they were running play action out of heavy set formations. I know the Bears did that a lot last year, but if you think about it, they did not pay what they paid to have DJ Moore, Chase Claypool, and Darnell Mooney being like, you know what, we're only going to have two of you on the field for the plays.
Yeah. Didn't they just sign him or bring another tight end too?
Yeah, they did, but I think he was more of a blocker. No, they brought in Tonyan, my bad.
Yeah, the blob.
Yeah.
Bobby T. I think they will run two tight end sets, but I don't think it'll happen frequently.
No.
You don't invest that heavily in wide receiver and not run, you know, 11 personnel, one tight end, one back.
Dude, the blob's just going to block for those four touchdowns from Donta Foreman, all right? That's just what's going to happen.
I'll take it. All right, so any last thoughts? I think that's about it for 77, right?
I'm hoping for... Oh, no, we have our gummy takes.
Oh, yeah. That, you know why I forgot? It's because of the gummy.
Really, right. Really stoned.
Damn. Yeah. Shane, do you have one off the rip? You got one?
I don't. Can you guys vamp?
Yeah. Ryan, you got a gummy take for me?
Jelani Woods, 6 touchdowns this year.
Hell yeah.
See, I love that, though, because that's as Ryan as it gets.
Right? I got mine.
All right, Shane, land on me.
Zach Wilson is the starter for the New York Jets in 2023.
Oh,
damn.
That's tough. How do I come up with something to that level? Okay, hang on. Let me think. What have I been really working on here?
Oh, you got something in the workshop?
All right, here we go. Is he a Abanaconda? He is the second running back drafted in the 2023 NFL draft.
Dude, I can feel your boner from here.
Oh, there it is. Dude, I got to tell you, though, it is like they're talking too damn much about my guy on every fantasy, everything, everywhere.
Same with Marvin Mims. Everybody shut the fuck up. Let me get my guys.
Yeah, I know. So that's a pretty piping hot take. Those are 3 spicy takes. It's a good way to end it, I think, guys.
I think so, too. A good episode.
Yeah. Good job, everyone. I think we'll come back next week with a short review of Ernest. Was it Ernest Goes to Camp?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Are we actually doing it?
Yeah.
I'm in.
All right. Ernest Goes to Camp and our 78s and another fun night awaits you in the next episode. Thanks for listening.
Be well. Take care of yourselves.
Good night.
Have a good week.
To whatever movies.